You are the title man.
Say that again.
Okay, you have to stop talking over me because you're going to make my editing job horrible.
No, this is all. This is all. My goal is to make zero editing here. Say title man again.
I'm Jeannie Philette Bowerman.
And I'm Kira Duggan.
And you are listening to The Story Will Save You. You guys, if you listened to the first episode, you met me and you met Kira Duggan. And this is our third partner in crime, Matt Mistich, who is a partner at Pipeline Media Group. How can I describe you, Matt? Crazy.
Let's go back to title man. When you said title man, I looked out the window and I nodded. You're like one of those noble moments. I like the title.
Could you imagine a cape blowing behind you? Title man?
Not a cape man. Maybe a peacoat.
Okay, peacoat.
In a Manhattan breeze. Sure.
With a Manhattan in your hand.
With a Manhattan, standing in Manhattan.
Yes.
Don't forget about the peacoat.
And the peacoat.
This is going to be a long, I said 30 minutes in and out. It's going
to
be a long.
Well, yeah, because these are supposed to be our short little like 15 minute ones. This one will probably be a little longer because you're getting to know Matt. And I don't know if you want to talk about you, but.
No.
Okay.
Look it up.
Look it up.
Yeah. No one does research anymore, as we've talked about.
You know, they really don't. And can I just tell you, the topic of our session tonight is why we DNF, like did not finish. What I find so fascinating is there's so many people who, not even talking about submissions, not even talking about reading a book that they bought or anything like that. So many people don't finish thoroughly reading a social media post or just, like they just like quickly jump to a conclusion. Everyone take a breath.
That's a good point. Headline reading, DNF.
Yes. So here we are advocating that people read an entire article, not just the headline. Yet at the same time, when we get submissions for Fringe Press or when I'm reading a book that I bought at the bookstore, I don't always finish the whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
So let's talk about what pulls you out of a story.
I came with this topic in hand because I have felt guilty about DNFing. I've been reading a lot more lately because of a book pipeline and lots of author friends that are coming out with their debut novels or second or third novels. And you know, I want to read a lot. I've got 120, 130 some odd books just kind of scattered about in my house, in my office. Jeannie's eyes have gone wide.
Totally. I want to vomit. No, I mean, I love books, but I just like, I have this huge stack myself and it's just.
Yeah. It's part of the decor now. It's okay.
It is.
But I have all these books and I start reading them and I kind of start to put it down, but then I feel guilty that I'm putting it down. So I have DNF guilt thing. If it's not a real thing, then we coined it here on episode 2 of The Story Will Save You. First appearance, DNF guilt.
When you talk about DNF guilt, this is where I feel guilty, is I know as a writer how hard these people work to get their stories out and onto the page. And I really, every time I pick up something, I want to love it. Mm-hmm. I really want to love it. And I really do respect how much work it took to do it, whether it's an unpublished piece, a submission, a short story, a poem, published book, whatever it is. I really want to finish it.
Yes.
Sometimes I don't want to finish it, but I want to finish it. And so that's where I think the guilt comes in, because I really want to finish it.
When we're doing judging, everyone thinks like, oh, you know, gatekeepers, I mean, technically we're gatekeepers, right? Gatekeepers, they just, they're immediately can't wait for a reason to put it down. And that's not it. It's you can't wait for a reason to keep reading.
Yes.
Which is similar, but different. It's even the same with published books. I want a reason to keep reading. I'm not going in with a negative mindset like, oh, this is probably going to suck. I'm not going to finish it.
I get so excited when we're reading for the contest, when I find something that I'm like, oh my gosh, I can't believe I have to stop reading it because it's only 5,000 words. I really want to read this book. You know,
I felt like that Molly McCloy's book. I'm like, I want the whole thing. Like it's just one big tease, you know, her memoir.
Yeah.
She'd be a good guest to have, by the way.
Oh my gosh. She's so funny.
Yeah.
We'll have her.
I made a list. My top three reasons why I DNF. Right. Number one, I'm not into it. I don't like the story. It's just not my thing. Right. Number two, the writing is bad. And number three is something I forgot because I actually didn't write it down. But there was a third one of why I DNF. But it's really just those two things. You know, either the writing's not great or it's just you're not into the story. It's like anything else, it's a movie or play or something. It doesn't ease the guilt of not finishing a friend's book. Not that I have. Most friends' books I do finish, you know.
Like even with our short story submissions that we get at Pipeline Artists, sometimes the first sentence, I'm like, but because I'm a writer too, I read past the first sentence. But the first sentence sometimes will let me know, oh, wow, this is going to be great. This is what I do now. I read, especially like unpublished manuscripts from friends or whatnot. I will give it the first 5,000 words or so, you know, and I will keep reading because a lot of people aren't starting the book where they should start the book. They start the book way too early. They give us way too much exposition. They're trying to tell us the whole backstory, this whole, I want the writer to assume I'm smart and I'm going to figure this out. Give me a really great scene that pulls me right in, that just by showing me by the character's actions, that tells me a little bit about them. Mm-hmm. Like if this character did X, what does that tell me about their personality or possibly their backstory by what they're doing? I cannot stand it when it's just this whole lengthy description. And then when they were in kindergarten, they, you know, like, I don't want to hear all that.
Do you see that often with published books or you're talking about friends, unpublished?
Mostly things? Unpublished, but sometimes published. The other thing, when we talk about like DNF regrets, or what was your phrase?
DNF guilt.
Guilt. There. Let's also talk about the other guilt you have when you read the entire thing. You have spent a bunch of hours dedicated to the story. Mm-hmm. And then
I know where this is going. Go ahead. I know what your biggest pet peeve is.
A crappy ending.
Oh, I know.
Okay, we'll do a whole other
story. I don't mind it that as much as you.
Hate it. I hate it because I've invested all this time into it and you're not even going to give me a satisfying ending. But what the hell is that?
It ends how it ends. Just
no, it doesn't. Deal with it. They got tired and they phoned it in and they just wrote some stupid ending because their agent, and I'm talking New York Times bestsellers. I've had multiple of them that I'm like, this, you've got to be kidding me.
You're a big end. You're an end snob.
I am.
Last chapter snob.
For me, the beginning, so that you're not a DNF, the beginning, just grab me. And then I will sit back and I will sink in and read. It's that first bite and the last bite. The middle, you can just, you know, whatever in the middle. But give me a good, solid beginning and a solid ending and I will be happy.
I don't disagree with that. It's fine. There's DNF and then there's finished but hated ending. So you're like a FBEH. FBHE DNF.
I'm a BITCH.
What's that acronym? I get it. Like that's, I think that's why when I've gone back to fiction writing, I've always been like this though, where I'll think of the ending first usually, and then I won't know what the story's about. And then I'll kind of get a loose idea and then think of a really good, you know, at least interesting opening. And then that is really kind of all that matters. That's all people remember is the every editor that's listening to this, lit agents, like, no, that's not correct at all, but whatever. A good ending and a good beginning is like, you know, it's the bookends that matter, right?
Right.
You can do whatever you want. Here's why I would support that theory. If you have a great opening and like we buy into the world and we're at least moderately interested in the characters, you can kind of go off the rails and do whatever you want because you already have us invested, right? And if you go off all the rails and do whatever you want, but you sew everything up nice and neatly and also interestingly, right? Which is not the best synonym. It's not the most elegant synonym for a writing and publishing podcast. But if you wrap it up interestingly, you're kind of, you know, you've kind of done your job.
Yeah.
What are the endings that you hate? Like, what's a cheap ending to you?
Oh, I'll tell you an ending.
Don't even name the book. Don't name the book.
I'm not going to name the book.
Unless the author's dead.
No. I can't even.
It's no, because even... no identifying info. If it's like Moby Dick, you could be like, you know, okay. Fuck Melville. Like, that's okay.
Literally.
Can we cuss in this podcast?
Yes. Literally, okay. A character... when there was this big climatic scene between the lovers and the wife's husband, and it was this, and this was historical, and it was this big climatic scene where the guns are drawn, and all of a sudden a character came out of the hedgerow who we've never met before and killed the bad guy with a bow and arrow. Never met this person before.
I love it.
What?
I love it.
Like, who is this person and why? Were they there?
And was it done for comic effect?
No, this was not a comedy. Oh, it well. Was it. I literally took the book and threw it across the room.
Is it still there?
Oh, God. And then I actually went to pick up another one of his books to read, and I was scared because he had me the whole time, had me all the way through. And I think it was one of those writers who has who's very prolific. And I think that a really great writer. I mean, very enjoyable. And this was a book farther along in his career. And it was almost like maybe his agent was saying, OK, wrap this up, buddy. We got to get this book done and move on to another one, because you could almost tell that it was just like, okay, let's just make this quick. Because I think he was afraid to make us not like the wife's lover because they were lovers and this was a husband, like she was married. So I think it was almost like if we let him kill the guy, then maybe we won't like him and be rooting for them. So sometimes you just have to let them kill the guy. The guy was a jerk. He was an asshole. Like no one would cry if he died. Like,
but he did kill him with a random bow and arrowist. That just emerged out of nowhere.
Maybe he conjured it up. It was his vision.
I love the fact that you threw the book across the room.
I did. I threw it across the room. And it was my Kindle.
It wasn't even a hardcover.
No, it was my Kindle. Luckily, my Kindle didn't break.
So for the beginning writers out there who are wondering what the most important part books are, it's the beginning. And it's the end. You can do anything you want with the ending. No bow and arrow murderers.
But it is the beginning. And I think some people will forgive a kind of ending, but if they enjoyed the whole ride. But it is the beginning. And also for those beginning writers out there, the story will save you.
I'm reading a book right now from a debut novelist who I like quite a bit. Really good writer. But the middle of the book is kind of in a little bit of a lull, but I'm already into it. I'm already into the world. I'm into the character. I don't care what the genre is even. It doesn't have to be super gripping and like breadcrumby throughout, right? Breadcrumby.
Yeah.
Well, I've coined three phrases in this podcast. It has to kick off well. And if it doesn't, then DNF territory.
Okay. The other thing too, the DNF territory is introducing too many characters right away. And you're just like, oh my gosh, I don't know who I'm following here. I need a map.
Good God.
Yeah. Yes.
We have an article. I just approved it 5 minutes before we started recording this podcast. Actually, you approved it 5 minutes.
We mutually approved it.
Mutual improvement. This was as it relates to screenwriting, but it's the same note. Don't introduce 10 characters in the first two pages. There's just no way to pull it off.
Yeah.
I said that to somebody once, and they gave me the example of The Godfather because it opens at the wedding. And I'm like, yeah, but the first scene isn't 10 people that we're meeting all at once. It's Marlon Brando, right? And the other actor that's in that scene. Nearly impossible to pull off. What were you going to say?
And it's different with a movie than with a book. Like reading Game of Thrones book after I'd watched the whole series. In the series, I'm terrible with names. So when I'm watching the show, I didn't remember their names, you know, because it didn't matter because I saw their face. So I'm reading the book and I'm like, oh, I got to remember all these names. It's a little overwhelming.
Did it put you at a huge advantage, though, having watched?
Oh, my God. Totally. Yeah. But I was reading it for POV, which we'll talk about another time, choosing the POV of your book. But is there anything else that's like that would make you, for me, it's like too much description, too much backstory, too many characters, like too much. Like, don't try so hard. Give me a good scene with a good character in it and I'm in.
It gets subjective from person to person. For me, I like an opening chapter or an opening, you know, few pages that are like, slow. That just feel like you're in for the flow, but that like, it feels like the authors, you know, we're not going to read a generic story. When we do judging for book pipeline, it's a little different because we're reading the synopsis and we're not going in all that cold necessarily. Although I guess you're reading the inside cover and back cover for books that you're reading too, but the ones that like, you know, it starts off like it's just talking about the weather. Like,
oh my God.
Like, I don't need to know about unless it's a book about, you know, tornadoes or something, like that's fine. But otherwise,
waking up. Don't do that.
Yeah.
When I don't read a lot of alarm clock going off.
I don't read that in books a lot. I read that mostly. It's like a script cliche.
No.
You read it in books?
In unpublished, not
our contest. You're just talking about, published.
Yeah. Well, in our contest, yeah, we've had people do that. But just, it's just a thing. It's, I don't know what it is, because I'd like to say something helpful and instructional. When you're writing that first draft, which is very daunting, and you're still learning your characters and you're learning the world and all this stuff, I don't care. Write the alarm clock scene. Do it all. And then there's a lot of times you get down the road, you get to that next, you, now you've learned, you're 20 pages in, 30 pages in, whatever. And now you're like, okay, now I get where I'm, it's like you have your equilibrium. Then just go back and cut that stuff in the beginning. We had a symposium the other night with Julia F. Green that was so good. It was about characters, you know, learn your character first, and that drives and develops the plot and all of that, which is a lot of Scott Myers. Those of you who are listening or screenwriters might know him. That's his philosophy as well. Everything comes from character. But she had this great piece of advice that I thought was fantastic. Like, when you write down what your scenes are going to be, like in the outlining phase, then go back and ask yourself, is this scene a scene that I really want to experience, read, feel? Or is this scene something that can just be a summary? Like, just a little summary mention.
Yeah.
That's, I would say, probably for me, the best piece of advice for writers, because there's a lot of times they will either write things that should just be a summary, or they won't write the scene that should really be a scene, that instead of just being like an aside mention, oh, remember when we went to that battle and we killed 20 people? Right. I don't know, maybe I want to see that battle.
Right. I think a lot of novelists aren't, this is definitely a criticism, actually. But a lot of novelists, I'm talking about published novelists too, they're just not good with dialogue. Like, I read a book last month that I did finish. I skimmed, but I did finish it. Really established author. I love her writing style. It was the first book I read of her, and I'm a big fan now, and I have other books in my queue, but she's just not great with dialogue. I'm sorry. But the screenwriters I've seen that transition to novel writing, surprise, tend to be a little better with dialogue. So you kind of have to play to your strengths sometimes too.
And yeah, there's also things that screen editors don't do well when they transition over, because it's just, it's very different. I think we're so trained. I started as a screenwriter, and you're so trained to not get in people's heads, to not be flowery with your prose, to not describe anything in depth. So, but I do think screen editors probably would write that open dramatically, because we have so few pages we're allowed to write. So you got to get right at it. You know,
it goes
maybe that's
fast.
Why that's my preference. I don't know.
Yeah. The screen editor turned novelists sometimes tend to, their pacing's just a little off. It goes too quick. We don't have time to settle in, because that's how they were trained, right?
Right.
In fact, you gave me a good note on my like very, very first like NaNoWriMo level draft of the book that I wrote in 2022. I had like two pretty big paragraph chunks of exposition in the beginning, because I wanted to just like get it over with. Because that's just, I don't know, the mentality of like going back to novel writing. And I broke it apart and I moved chunks of it elsewhere. And it just it flowed so much better, because now, like, you know, I can play to my strength, which is more dialogue and like characters talking, right? Rather than trying to explain a bunch of stuff and getting it out of the way, or kind of, you know, glossing over those interactions. So all this relates to how to keep a reader hooked. That's really the parent topic of this conversation.
Yeah. I don't know how many of you out there read Anna Karenina, but I decided one year.
Didn't it come out when you were a little girl?
It did. I got the original copy. I tried.
It didn't.
I really did. I know.
Being ageist.
Well, that's okay. We've already established on episode one, I'm old and think about death, but
you're not actually that much older than me, if you really think about it. So whatever.
No comment. So
all right. Anna Karenina.
Anna Karenina. I was reading it. I was so proud of myself. I'm reading this classic. This is great. And then I got to about 50 pages describing a field. And I was like, I am so out. I just put it down. Like, I'm done. Sorry, Anna.
Classic novel Anna Karenina didn't cut it for you.
DNF.
So Anna Karenina, the novel by Leo Tolstoy, I call him Lee myself. Not great. DNF.
I'm sure there are people out there who loved the book, and I apologize, but DNF.
Don't apologize. I'm going to get a DNF stamp, and I'm going to go to the library,
and just,
I'm going to start every book. And if it's like, I'm just going to loudly stamp it down.
like, what's that noise? He comes here every Wednesday to DNF stamp books.
Oh, and then what they should do then is take every book that you've DNF stamped and put it on sale.
Yes. And it's a whole DNF section. There's like young adult and there's mystery thriller and there's DNF. Like, you're probably going to DNF this book and they're all 90% off.
And they can put it at the end cap and mm-hmm. put like Matt's challenge. Like,
yeah,
you know, like they could do a whole marketing campaign around that.
Dare you to finish this mediocre mid-ass book.
And then I can already see like the hashtag DNF rage posts coming at you because I finished that. It was great.
My challenge to the social media users out there would be to just publicly admit a classic piece of literature that you did not finish. We all got a handful. I don't have one off the top of my head. I have a lot of like not classic books over the last 3 months that I did not finish today. I don't want to bash authors. It's a miracle to get a book published.
I will also want to say something that in praise of beginnings of books.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, the writing voice. I will Important. Forgive. Oh my gosh. I will forgive of all of this. You could read, if you can find a creative way to just pull me in with your words and make me say, I wish I had written that sentence.
Yeah.
Like, I will keep reading. You can be talking to me about what happened to them in kindergarten. I don't care. I will keep reading. So to me, that's the one caveat. If you've got a really great voice and reading your words is just a pure pleasure.
Mm-hmm.
It's like having like one of those really expensive meals where every bite you take, you just want to go, mm, you know?
Sure. So
then I will sit through it and the whole thing because it's just enjoyable. This marvel that they do with the words.
Name an author, top of your head, who's got a really great writing voice, historic or
Of course, current. I can't think of anything.
Well, you know who mine is.
Me?
You could say it. No. No. One day.
One day. If I ever finish this book.
Who's the author I consistently go to whenever someone asks me whose books I like?
Is this a test?
It's like, yes, it's a test. If you don't get it, you're fired.
Well, I'm gonna DNF the test.
You can't DNF this question.
Yes, I
Emily
can.
St. John Mandel.
Oh, that's yes. right. I should yes. know that. I should She's know a
special
that.
Lady on my shelf. And you know what? Yeah. I've read The Glass Hotel. I've read Sea of Tranquility. If you asked me to pitch both of those books and just tell you what they were about, couldn't do it. But I love them both. Brilliant, brilliant writing. But,
I started reading The Red Tent again.
The
Red Tent.
By who?
Anita Diamond. It's historical and it's family and it's biblical and it's whatever, but she does have a beautiful writing voice. But
I'm sorry, it's Anita Diamond? There's no way there's an author named Anita Diamond.
Stop it. Hold on.
While she's gone, I'm going to look up Anita Diamond. Googling
it's ahead. Not Diamond. Like
I know, but thing. That's a rough. I know it's, this is now. Yeah. Boston girl. Oh, yeah, you mentioned this. But
it's
that's
like
a rough,
20
that's
years
a,
old.
That's a tough name. Anita Diamond. People everywhere is like, Anita Diamond? You need a what? I would have changed it.
Anita, if you're listening to this.
The woman's 72 years old. She's not changing her name at this point.
I apologize for him because the book is beautiful. And he should shut his pie hole.
I'll go buy it just for restitution. Is that the right word? I don't know.
The other thing, characters that make you want to keep reading because you want to keep following them. Like the flip side of that is like this book, The Red Tent, is kind of like two parts. Like the first part is like the mothers and the second part is the daughter going off. In the second part, I miss the mothers. I was like, oh, I want to go back and hang out with the mothers. Like I really miss them.
Mm-hmm.
That second part was great, satisfying. I don't remember the end because I have a terrible memory. So that's what makes it great for me. I could read books over again because I don't remember.
You remember the bow and arrow going through the guy's neck at the end of whatever it was.
I remember the ends if they piss me off.
Okay, that's good. But that means that the author was successful because you remembered their book.
Okay. So also let's talk about, can we just talk about a movie for 1 second? Because
sure.
I just want to.
You got two more minutes.
Okay. Then it's a hard out. Broken Flowers. I have a friend.
Bill Murray.
I had a friend who hated that movie because she hated the ending because it was very ambiguous. I absolutely loved the ending. I thought it was perfect. Mm-hmm. It's, you know, like not wrapped up in a little bow, whatever. He's just standing there kind of looking around, you know,
mm-hmm.
It was so good. So it endings don't have, and this is an ending conversation, which I should be talking about a beginning conversation, but things don't have to be all wrapped up in a nice little bow. Assume your audience is smart. So don't force feed them too many facts, don't force feed them too much exposition. Give them some beautiful language that they can enjoy, like a fine wine, and don't try so hard. That's my advice.
Did finish hated ending. That's another variation. We'll call it that. It's easier. DFHE. May my own book not be a DFHE for you when you read it.
So here's the last statement I have. How many people DNF this episode?
Out of the four people listening to this episode, I'm going to say only one did not finish.
That's 25%.
Yeah. Well, that's not bad.
Not bad odds. Yeah.
The end. Until next time, let's whisper it. Whisper our outro.
Story will save you.
Yeah.
That's creepy.
It is creepy.
Yeah.
Cut the recording. That's good enough.
The Story Will Save You is a Pipeline Artists original podcast. Like, subscribe, and follow us on social media at Pipeline Artists and at Book Pipeline. For more information, visit pipelineartist.com and bookpipeline.com, where we have contests for unpublished manuscripts as well as for published books that would make great adaptations for either film or television. Learn more about our efforts to help writers find publishing success on bookpipeline.com. Until next time, let the story save you.